This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Accelerate Your Business Growth,
where we're exploring all sorts of business topics. Experts from around the world join me, your host, Diane Helbig, for a conversation where they share their expertise with all of you. Take what you need when you need it. Featured on Inc.com, Forbes, and MSNBC's Your Business, this podcast is recognized as one of the best podcasts for small business, sales, leadership, social media, and more. When it comes to business, Accelerate Your Business Growth has got it covered. And now on with the show. My guest today is Chris Rodriguez. Chris is a 20-year marketing veteran with a passion for driving growth and tangible results for brands and entrepreneurs. He's worked with over 30 startups across all tiers of funding and sizes, generating brand awareness, web traffic, signups, downloads, and most importantly, customers and revenue. He now runs iXL.co, a B2B SaaS-focused demand generation and marketing operations agency based out of the greater Washington, D.C. area. Thanks so much for being here today, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Diane. Excited to chat with you today.
I'm excited to chat with you, too. We are recording this sort of early 2024, first quarter 2024. And over the past, I would say, couple of years, there's been an awful lot going on with digital marketing. So I am curious, from your standpoint, what you think are and will be, at least through this year, the most impactful channels in digital marketing.
Sure. So perhaps a little bit of a cop-out answer, but my take is it's not so much that the channels themselves have changed, but it's more the evolution of the tactics within the channels.
Oh.
So, for example, I'm a big believer in the concept of account-based marketing from a B2B standpoint. And at the end of the day, that still simplifies down to finding the right target market in the form of a list, and placing that list across the various target channels, paid social, paid search, paid display, and cold email for prospecting, and making sure that those efforts are personalized in nature or hyper-segmented such that the right message gets to the right person. That part hasn't changed. What might be changing here is the idea of the, let's say, personalization for cold email or the hyper segmentation to get more efficient ROI from your efforts. I think there you have to pay attention to the legalities at play with, for example, Google and their recent rule changes for spam email. There are privacy concerns abound over the last year or two about being able to utilize things like cookies. And so it's just a matter of the tactics changing and following along with the progress of the industry.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that makes sense to me when you say it. Is what about B2C?
Sure. So I think in B2C, similarly, the idea of the channel isn't changing.
Okay.
It's more the approach within it. So for example, big believer in paid social targeting based on interest, targeting based on words or hashtags used. I think maybe there is an evolution towards TikTok ads more so than in years past. That's isn't so much new for 2024. It's more an extension of 2023. but still continuing to grow there. I think Facebook ads are becoming, let's say, more difficult to improve your metrics without getting hyper-specific and hyper-targeted. So an example would be if I'm selling, let's say, a sneaker, I'm a big fan of sneakers, you might want to regionalize your campaigns in order to understand that certain regions perform better than others, certain demographics perform better than others. Again, the high level isn't so much what changes, it's more the approach in the weeds. And so I'm a firm believer in hyper-segmentation, personalization. I think that those tactics will continue to grow in importance.
Okay, I agree with you. What do you say to the person who says, I don't want to get that specific because I feel like I'm going to miss out on potential buyers?
Sure. So whether it's B2B or B2C, I'm a firm believer in funnel management, which is to say, you know, the traditional cliches, you can easily Google them, but awareness, consideration, followed by decision, top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel. It's the same methodology, which is to say you want to create high level awareness with an expectation that only but a few people will actually care about what you're making them aware of. Think of it as a large fishnet analogy in the ocean. You're picking up fish, but you're also picking up shoes, litter, scraps, seaweed. Right. And so when you shake it out, you end up getting the people who actually matter versus don't. And then you continue to market deeper in that way. So from a top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel perspective, I might do a video ad at the top of funnel. And probably about 90 to 95% of those people will not care about my video and will keep scrolling. Total seconds watched on my video, less than 3 seconds. But for those that watched it for 15 seconds or 30 or 60, I'm deeming those people to show interest. And so you keep further nurturing or warming up those people with more marketing in a separate, more hyper-segmented campaign. Call it middle of funnel. You're still browsing, I like to say, consideration. To then finally see, wow, even more engagement from that second level of engagement. Now we take you to a third level of engagement, which is to say, buy now, retarget, very aggressive to the sale. If you were to think about your ratios of focus or budget or efforts, think of it as 20-20-60, which is to say, for those that are just becoming aware of us in the first place, I might spend 20% of my budget. For those that are still browsing, middle of funnel, call it, consideration, also 20%. And then finally, for those that have really showed interest, go aggressive, 60% of your efforts and your budget.
Wow, thank you. And thanks for the example of the video. That whole thing that you went through made perfect sense to me. It really clarified, you know, the hyper-segmentation, what you're talking about. So when you talk about personalization, can you give the listeners some ideas of like what that looks like? Is it, because I hear it and I think, okay, you're using their name.
Sure.
Is it that, or, you know, what are some examples of personalization?
Sure. So I'll use myself as an example.
Okay.
At the risk of maybe sharing a bit too much about me, but I try to be an open book, right? So obviously there's my name, Chris. There's my location. I'm in the greater Washington, D.C. area. There's my profession. I'm a digital marketer. There's my heritage. Last name Rodriguez. I am of Latino descent. There is my education. I've attended the University of Virginia, also spent a small amount of time at NYU, and went to a high school in New Jersey called Lawrenceville. And so these things may be relevant if I can find them through targeting to then indicate interest. For example, NYU alumni group, UVA alumni group, Lawrenceville alumni group, marketers in the greater Washington, D.C. area. So this is at least the very first surface level of personalization. This is about me. This isn't about some product, someone maybe selling random cars or bags. And just because I'm in DC, I care about the car or the bag.
Right.
I may care about something else. I've shown interests. I've clicked like on several pages on Facebook. I'm a big fan of the New York Knicks, New York Yankees, New York Jets. So if you're trying to sell merchandise from the New York Jets, you're going to see that I like that product. You might also see that I liked it, but I am a marketer. So you might say, marketers in DC want to go to the Jets Redskins game, excuse me, the Commanders game. and so I give these as light examples just to say a Venn diagram overlap of demographic information plus interest information is usually a great start to personalizing something for me. Yes, you can enhance it even further by saying, hi, Chris, right? And that's a little bit overdone, but still useful. You might also see my behavior. So a common one is in e-commerce land, I've browsed certain products. I might even have added to cart and simply not checked out. So I'm now being retargeted, or the experience is really I'm being chased across the web with the thing that I almost bought but didn't buy. Again, to the sneakers analogy, I am a frequent shopper on a website called StockX. And StockX does a really good job of their retargeting because they take my wish list and sometimes my recently browsed, and they follow me through display advertising across my web experience, whether I'm visiting ESPN, CNN, Fox, etc. I'm seeing this StockX display ad in a dynamic way showing the exact two or three pairs of sneakers that I was just looking at. And if you can relate, I'm sure, as well as your listeners, because many different products do a good job of retargeting to highlight this. So that's maybe a branch on the tree of personalization. It is personal to you. Okay. Other people are not seeing that sneaker or that item as you are. So there are different ways to approach this concept of personalization. But I just think very segmented, very specific to you. And if you're thinking this way in your efforts, you will simply put get a higher ROI.
Okay, let's talk about ROI for a minute, because as you were talking about that, I was thinking to myself, okay, there's a lot of small business owners listening to this podcast, and they're potentially, some of them are potentially wondering what sort of investment it takes for those sorts of campaigns to be effective and worthwhile. So what do you think?
Well, ROI, which for those that it isn't obvious, stands for return on investment, is literally saying I've invested X dollars, what did I get for it? And simple math would say if I spent a dollar and I got a dollar and 1 cent, technically I'm, I guess, profitable in that small example. Usually the standard is you would like to get at least 2, but often 3x on your spend. I spent a dollar, I got $3 back. So if I'm selling a $15 item and I spent $5, but I got one sale, I am very successful. There's an advertising metric called ROAS, R-O-A-S, return on ad spend, which is ROI, but specific to the ad spend.
Okay.
And so the way that you would usually, let's say, optimize for ROI, or in this case, ROAS, would be to experiment with many different approaches with an expectation that a significant chunk of them will, for lack of a better term, fail. But if you believe in the methodology in an emotionless way, I'm trying 15 different targets. I might try moms, I might try dads, I might try you know, interest in X, interest in Y. But I'm deploying all of them in a almost scientific experiment way. I've got $100. I've got 20 permutations. I'll spend five on each, right? And you'll start to see those that perform better than others. And just to oversimplify, imagine you literally just turned everything off that wasn't working and kept on only the things that were working. Well, you might see of the 20, 17 failed. And instead of saying glass half empty, 17 failed, woe is me. Imagine a different perspective. I intentionally was experimenting here to find those three wins. And eureka, I found them.
Yeah.
And so now you've got three, let's say, ROI, ROAS positive experiments amongst the 20. And if you continue with that methodology, you'll discover the diamonds in the rough. And if you keep almost in a cohort-like way, trying another 20, and then trying another 20, suddenly you have three winners in the first, three winners in the second, three winners in the third, and lo and behold, you have nine winners. And that is a sort of experimental methodology for how to find actual ROI positive efforts. The same logic holds for email marketing. Maybe you tried three different copywriting approaches and you A-B test, or ABC test in that example, and you clearly see copywriting two is better than one and three. So for future, you turn off one and three and ramp up on two. That mentality applies across the board for all channels, be it paid or organic, or call it free marketing efforts.
Yeah, that's great. That is, I like that a lot. It's all about finding what works.
Yeah, and I try to be emotionless about the process. Now, of course, do I have a horse in the race here and there? Sure. But if you're in a room full of executives, it behooves you to say, though I believe X will perform best, here's my informed hypothesis or my experience. I'm also not leading with ego and in an emotionless way. If the data says I'm wrong, so be it, I'm wrong. And we're going to go towards the data that's right. That's generally the methodology that I've used to engender trust amongst colleagues and clients.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think you have to do it in an emotionless way, because you have to be making logical decisions when it comes to the paths that you're implementing to get to goal. So it's part of the reason why I appreciate that tactic. When it comes to organic marketing, are there, you had mentioned video earlier, so I'm just curious if you think there are certain tactics that work better than others, or, I mean, I'm sure it's a mix, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on what people can be doing that maybe they're not thinking of.
Sure. So when we use the word organic is channel agnostic, but it is, to oversimplify, the free side of that channel. Whereas, let's say social media, there's, call it organic social and paid social. Mm-hmm. Search engines, there's organic search and paid search, right? So if you think about organic as the quote free side of the channel, then what we're talking about is there's quite a few limits to what you can do. Organic social, there are certain variables, and you can check the box of following best practices, posting with certain types of copywriting that engenders clicks, maybe some emojis, posting at certain times, posting on certain dates. All of that is true, but incremental in certain respects. That said, you should be utilizing the right words, publishing at the right times. I'm referencing organic social media, and testing those things to see what type of copywriting, what day of publishing, what time of day of publishing gets more engagement. A lot of this stuff is one Google away. For example, it's known in, let's say, email marketing that certain days of the week and certain times are better than others. I'll say Tuesdays is better than a Friday, or emailing during commute times is better than emailing during heads down business hours to some extent. So it's important to optimize for those variables just as table stakes. Now, to your example of video, let's say organic video,
mm-hmm.
the first thing to do is certainly create a killer video. And to that, like, there's only but so much that I or any one of us can say. There's certainly different approaches in terms of certain hooks to use, saying something big and impactful in the first 15 seconds. Yes. Again, a lot of this is a Google away. But at the end of the day, the video needs to be good. Now, let's assume you have a good video. I'm a firm believer in SEO, and there is a video version of SEO, YouTube optimization. And so writing the right titles, writing the right descriptions is very important for your video success, so long as you're distributing on YouTube, which I highly recommend. So again, the research of the right words, utilizing those right words, placing them in the right locations and with some level of frequency will allow you to appear high on the algorithm in the YouTube example for YouTube search results. And the same logic applies for Google and or Bing as it relates to organic search results there. Keyword research is important.
Mm.
I'm a big believer in not undercrediting keyword research. There is a particular metric that really matters called keyword difficulty, which is to say difficulty to rank on a scale of 0 to 100. So many people say, SEO is long-term, delayed gratification. I need results now. Sure, that's true, more so than it is false, yes. But there are ways to accelerate that. And the core way is to understand very low keyword difficulty. In other words, is it as literal as if you write it, they will come? No, but close. Because if your keyword difficulty is 5 out of 100, you can, easier than other permutations, rank on the first or second page of that term. So that applies to video optimization. That applies to optimizing your own website today, your product pages. That applies to new blog content strategies. Low keyword difficulty. If there were one metric for organic visibility, it would be low keyword difficulty.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. Great. This has been so enlightening. I mean, this is the thing about digital marketing is there's a lot to know. It changes a lot, but a lot of the things that you talked about are really things that just make good common sense. So, sure. Right.
Thank you for that feedback, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It is really great, Chris. I appreciate it. Will you tell the listeners how they can find you, please?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I am at the website IXLIEXCEL.co, not .com. And I'm also prominent on LinkedIn. My username is Chris XL. So CHRISEXCEL. And you'll see a friendly cartoon avatar there. That will happily accept your friend request and happy to answer any questions or get on any calls or chats. Those are the two best ways to reach me.
Awesome. So great. I'll make sure they're in the show notes. So again, thank you very much. And listeners, thank you. You are who we're doing this for. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Discover more episodes of this podcast and explore others at evergreenpodcast.com. As always, continue to prosper and be curious.
And if you're looking to get your sales strategy headed in the right direction, pick up a copy of Succeed Without Selling on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until we meet again on another episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, goodbye and good day. Don't you know that you're a
grown-up? I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it. No. Right.